This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Me, Matt Beadle, here with this week's guest, who is a goalkeeper coach relatively new on the first team scene. Following a playing career in non-league, he popped his coaching cherry at Weymouth alongside working with the Cherries in the academy set up at Bournemouth. A spell at Southend preceded a spell with Portsmouth before a return to Bournemouth, before a return to Portsmouth, which is where he now resides as first team goalkeeper coach. Joe Prudomo, welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hi, Matt. Yeah, thank you. It's good to be here and thank you for having me on.
Delighted to have you here. So we are in the lovely setting of Portsmouth's training ground. And typically, after a training session, we've come indoors and the sun is shining. It's quite pleasant out there. But about half an hour ago, it was horrendous.
Yeah.
Absolutely awful.
Yeah, I think everything felt a bit doomed today. We were driving in. I hit traffic for the first time. There was a crash this morning. So I said to you, I thought you were going to beat me in. And then I got here and everything was just blown over once the session was set up. So, yeah, we do get exposed to the wind here, but, yeah, ironically, it is much nicer now we're back inside.
Never known anything like it. So I went to uni in Southampton many, many moons ago, and I had grand designs today of driving down the M3, sun just breaking through the clouds, rocking up to training, because the last time, actually, I was at a Portsmouth training ground was 2010, Avram Grant. Okay. It's when they were training over at Eastleigh. Yeah. And the sun was shining. It was beautiful. But today, yeah, quite the contrast.
Yeah. No, it's, to be fair, the last week or so, the wind has been awful. And I think, well, we've said it all morning, haven't I? It's the element that I hate the most. I can deal with cold, I can deal with rain, but wind is a bit of a football ruiner, unfortunately.
Okay, well, we're going to get into you, your career, how you have ended up here. Your story. But before we do that, so we have some quick fire questions that begin every single podcast. And you were a player in non-league, so this does apply to you. So the first of those questions is the gloves that you wore.
Oh, loads of different ones, but the first ones I always remember having was Roche. So I had a goalkeeping coach from very young called Clive Saunders, and he just used to have boxes and boxes full of different Roche de Serie A gloves in the back of his van, and so it just felt like Christmas every session, begging mum and dad for a pair. So yeah, Roche was the first proper pair I remember having once I started.
Okay, favourite kit,
probably one I had at Bashley, because it was one that actually fitted, because I'm not the tallest in the world. So when I first started playing as a young goalie, you just wore whatever the other goalies normally had, and they were normally a lot bigger than me. And it was about my third season there, and it was the first time they ordered a kit my size. So probably that one.
Excellent. Make? Remember the brand?
It was Macron.
Oh, okay.
I remember it was Macron.
Yeah.
All green.
Lovely. Oh, okay. Preferred colour? All green?
I prefer all green or all yellow something, but all matching.
The monochrome.
Yeah.
Okay. And most memorable save. Now, we say to everyone, doesn't have to necessarily be the best save you've made, your favourite save that you've made, something that sticks in the memory, just something that you can recall, an important save, just anything that sticks out.
Yeah, probably one. We were playing in a game at Arsley, and Southern League game, and a guy's volleyed it at the back post, and it's one of those, I don't remember seeing it, and somehow, before you know it, I can feel it flicking off my fingertips and over, and it was, we were 1-0 up at the time with not long left to go. So probably that one, because still to this day, I don't remember seeing the ball, so I don't know how I saved.
A couple more. So the first one, goalkeeping idol.
I think probably when I was growing up, actually watching Gareth Stewart and Neil Moss for Bournemouth, I remember absolutely idolising both of them. In terms of probably on the biggest stage, I think it would have been Seaman and Schmeichel. Obviously, they were in the Premier League when I sort of remember first started watching it. In terms of live games, Gaz and Mossy, and top level, either David Seaman or Schmeichel.
So we're going to get into your goalkeeping philosophy, your journey as to where you are now with League One Portsmouth, yeah, on the periphery potentially of the playoff places. We're going to get into all of that, the goalkeepers that you've worked with, and your journey. But I just want to start on the fact that I've watched training there, you with Matt Macy and a couple of the other lads. You can strike a ball. I was impressed.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I think, again, probably the biggest person I owe credit to that would be Gaz Stewart, coaching with him at Bournemouth, because Mossy was great when we had the department there. We would go up with him and Matt, who obviously does the analysis, and, you know, you would be there to help in sessions, and largely my job would be to press someone if they were working in possession, to cross or shoot, or to try and dive in header. Although Mossy used to say I was better using my nose, because he used to give me a bit of banter for that. But yeah, and Gaz just said to me one day when we were down at the academy training ground, he's like, look, we're going to do some stuff on practice on our left foot as well. He said, because if we're going to go up and help, we need to be able to use both feet, because if it's the left foot from the right, or even crossing with our left foot, that's how we're going to add value. We're not there to coach at this moment in time, because that's obviously Mossy and Ant's job. So I think it was just a combination of that, and then obviously coming from the non-league background, I think, to be honest, I was really self-conscious and probably a bit, you know, full of self-doubt as to, oh, you know, I haven't played, are people going to buy into me? And I just thought it was something that I could try and put in my favour to try and add credibility to myself, to be able to use both feet, strike well. And yeah, hopefully, you know, it's competent to recreate the scenarios that I need, and can, you know, be a tool in the armoury to try and help the sessions be as effective as they can for the boys, really.
There is a real element of that, isn't there? Because it sounds obvious that you need to be able to strike the ball quite well. But like you say, if you weren't a pro, then I guess that's not always going to come as naturally to some. Did you ever feel, you kind of alluded to it there, a pressure to actually have to be able to do that? Did you work specifically on it?
Yes, I mean, I think for me, when I was playing non-league football, like as I've already alluded to, I'm not the biggest, so I tried to control everything I could control. So I tried to make sure I could use both feet, because I didn't have ultimate range. Like, I couldn't kick it as far as some people. So I'm like, well, if I'm not going to be able to kick it in behind, I'm going to have to be really accurate and confident with the other bit. And to be fair, the change probably came when I started playing for my brother. He took over a non-league team, and we had a really young group, so physically we couldn't compete that well. So the solution was, well, we've got quite a bit of pace, so let's try and play and create space in other ways. So it's probably him that really tried to go, look, if you haven't got the range, you're going to have to be able to do this. So I really started working on it from there. And then, like I say, Gaz, as soon as we got together at Bournemouth, we just used to practice an awful lot, because we tried to make the sessions as real as we could. And if you can't use your left foot or you can't use your right foot, the session's not going to be that real or that helpful. So it is something I consciously work on, although it gets harder and harder now, because you're kicking so many footballs that your legs are a bit too tired to do extra. But you get enough repetition from doing it every day to hopefully keep it sharp.
We're certainly seeing the likes of yourself more and more now in the game, and I think it's only going to grow. And we featured a few on the podcast. We've spoken to Paul Clements, of course, with Huddersfield, Andrew Sparks, currently with Southampton. There are a number of other goalkeeper coaches now who didn't play at the top level. Ben Benson at Blackburn being another really good example. So I just want to get into that and your story as to how you got to here, and the fact that because you weren't a pro, and you've mentioned it a few times already, do you feel like you can come into this particular realm from an alternate angle, and the fact that you weren't a professional?
Yeah, I do. I think it probably shapes the way you are, at least initially. I think, like I've already alluded to, I felt, and some of the other guys might be different because obviously personality feeds into it, but I did feel a real need to probably prove myself that I was able to be here and I did have the knowledge. And how that probably came out initially was talking too much, stepping in too much, trying to show that you knew what you were talking about. And to be fair, again, going back to Bournemouth, because it was such a big part of shaping my journey, it was Mossy really helped sort of give you the confidence, because he just worked on a really simple basis that we're all sat around the table with different experiences, but they're all relative. So as long as you've got a why for an opinion, I want to hear the opinion. So as long as you can give me justification for why you think what you think, I'm not going to sit here and discredit it. I might not always agree with it and I might go in a different direction, but he certainly gave you the platform to kind of be heard. But I think what it probably does do, and I don't know whether those guys would say the same, is, like I say, I think it just really focused me on my process. How can I make sure I'm giving them the best that I feel that I can give them? And we alluded to it earlier, like just that peace of mind then, that, well, I've done everything I physically know how. It'll be for someone else to judge whether that's for them or whether that's good enough, but I'm going to leave no stone unturned. So I think for me, it probably just drove my desire to find the detail and the thought process behind what I did, because I didn't just trust my judgment. I didn't just trust, oh, I think we should do this and I think we should do it like that. I felt a real need to find evidence to basically say to myself, you might not be wrong. And then I think fortunately working with some good people and probably I think full-time coaching for about 6 years now, you gradually build a bit of confidence and start to go, never an arrogance or a complacency, but like work just becomes enjoyable. You come to work feeling like you can contribute and you look forward to doing that. Whereas to be honest, when you first start, there probably is that bit of fear, oh, how might I get found out today? Or, you know, the first time you get asked to do set pieces and you say yes and you smile and in your head you're thinking, oh, how's this going to go? But I think for me, it's just created a real desire to make sure I'm as well prepared as I can and willing to learn from anyone and everything. And yeah, so I think for me personally, it's been really helpful actually, because it's just made me try and learn from people who I would perceive to have knowledge that or experiences that I would want. And then in that process, you come across good people and start to see that you get feedback from them that maybe you have some knowledges and experiences that they feel they can benefit from too.
So your learning then and your studying of goalkeeping has kind of come on the job, right? Because I'm watching you out there on the grass today and you're stopping drills, you're tweaking movements with some of the players. And yeah, that's your job. You're a goalkeeper coach. I would expect you to be able to do that. But it still takes a particular eye, doesn't it, to be able to implement that?
Yeah. And I think probably when I come back to my learning pathway, probably what was reflected in the session and or in the sessions that you try and do is, like I said, I had a goalie coach, Clive Saunders, when I was younger, and he was brilliant, but he wasn't attached to my club. I had to go to him independently. So I felt for me, training was almost pointless for me, other than a fitness sharpness exercise, because there was no one there to actually guide me on any detail. There was no goalie coach at my games to help me with it. And actually, when I then started to reflect back, what I needed to do better was position better and move better. And understand my own tools to know how to behave or act in a certain moment. So for me, then when I started coaching, they were the real details that I started to look for. Because once you get to a certain level, and don't get me wrong, there are technical tweaks to be made. But, you know, as you can see, all the boys we're working with today are of a certain level of technical competency. So then it's the small tweaks on a position or how efficient they are to move or their body shape when they move that can be those differences between, you know, making a save and not. And then over a season that builds between keeping your place in the team or not, progressing from League One to the Championship or not. So I think, yeah, they just became the real things that I kind of tried to look at really. And again, like I keep saying, I was lucky to have some real expert knowledge around me when I went into Bournemouth to try and pick up on those things that maybe I'd never considered before.
So let's actually quickly do that. So for anyone that doesn't know who you are or where you came from, yeah. So you were a player and then you have, so how old are you now?
31.
So 31 yeah. years old, which yeah. is still so young, yeah. especially to be a professional goalkeeper coach. Rewind 15, 20 years ago, that was pretty much unheard of, I think. So just quickly explain to us, because it's quite a rapid ascent, I think, to where yeah. you are.
Yes, it did all happen really quickly. So I was, like I said earlier, I was playing for a non-league team called Bashley that my brother had taken over as manager of. And Tom knew Mark Molesley from some work he had done at Bournemouth previously. Mark got the job at Weymouth and asked if Tom would go as his assistant manager. And ironically, at that point, I was just going to stop playing football to focus on my career away from it. And then Moles phoned me and said, oh, well, look, do you want to come with your brother as player coach? I think we're going to get a goalkeeper on loan from Bournemouth, which is Mark Travers. Will you come and be the backup goalie and be the goalkeeping coach? Which I did. And so that was in like the July. And by the October, I was starting a full-time job at Bournemouth and coaching the under-9s to 18s. And just like you say, happened really quickly. Wasn't something I ever predicted to happen. I think the one thing it did reinforce that we were talking about earlier is, I think, speaking to Ant and Mossy, which is obviously where the interest came from initially. Basically, after the first couple of games, I just sent back a report on Travs. And I look back at it now and it was horrific in layout and some really useless information. I think it was about 20 pages long, detailing every time Travs breathed or moved. But actually, I think it just made them think, oh, actually, he really cares and he's trying to do the best with the tools that he's got. And then Ant came down to watch a game because obviously Chavs was playing and apparently was impressed with the service in the warm-up. And it just kind of stemmed from there. They just put two and two together. Okay, he seems like he's trying to be really diligent. Serves the ball. Trav seems to get on well with him. And I was working in a school at the time and they just offered me the opportunity in the half terms to come and watch Gaz with the 23s initially and see how they did it, build more of a relationship with Travs, although he wasn't down there every day, obviously, because he was up with the first team a lot. And then, yeah, by the October, that was, you know, transcended into the offer of a full-time job, which, again, as I mentioned, I grew up watching Gaz and Mossy, so it just, I remember when the phone call came, I was just like, I literally, Gaz phoned me on the Friday, and I had just got home from work at the school, and I drove straight back to the school to give my notice in literally 2 minutes after I got off the phone, because I was just so desperate to get there, and I didn't even know what the salary was until I got my first paycheck a month in, because it just felt too good to be true, really. And then I had, I think, probably just short of 3 years there, 3 years. And Moles and my twin brother is Moles' assistant manager, as I mentioned. They got the opportunity to go to Southend and it just felt too good an opportunity to turn down. I think me and Tom had always dreamed of, you know, playing football together in the Football League and that never happened. And then once the Weymouth journey started, I think that transcended into, oh, can we get there as coaches together? So for the opportunity, I think I was 27, 28 at the time to go and work in the Football League with someone I consider a really close friend in Mark and owe a lot to, because he's given me the Weymouth opportunity, the Southend opportunity, and obviously that led, you know, that had led to the Bournemouth in the first place. It was just too good to be true, really. And you know, it was an interesting and difficult time at Southend. I think there's some well documented stuff about the club there, but it was a real great learning curve. The goalkeepers were great to work with. I think Ox, for me as an experienced goalie and a young coach, was just great, because from day one he just went, look, you create the environment that you think is going to help me best and we'll work backwards from there. Don't worry about me. You do what you think is going to be good for us and we'll communicate. And that was massive for me, because, and I'll probably never thank him enough, because again, that was the next time for me to question myself. Okay, so I feel I've gained some respect working day to day with 18s and 23s. Goalkeepers. Now I'm going in with a guy that's played 200-300 Football League and Scottish Premier League games. Is he going to buy into what we try to do? So that was great for me, how he was from day one to just go, you know, over to you kind of thing. And then same as anything, really, unfortunately in football, you either, it goes really well and someone else comes to take you, or the club decide it's not going so well and move you on. And then I spent probably a few weeks feeling really sorry for myself. And then the reality of life hit, and I was actually on a building site for a good few months.
Really?
With a friend's dad, yeah. You know, so that was, it was really good actually, because it was, you probably don't realise sometimes the pressure you felt under trying to get your first job right, and because you're there with a friend and your twin brother, I was more worried about it going well for them rather than myself, and obviously for the club's sake, you really wanted it to. So I think to come out of the pressure cooker and do something completely different was really nice initially, but then also going, oh my God, I love what I do. Like, when and how can I find a way back in? And yeah, like, probably got some interviews for things I never thought I would get interviews for, and probably missed out on getting interviews for some stuff I felt quite well placed to have a conversation about. So it was a really interesting and unpredictable kind of time. And then I ended up at Portsmouth. I did 6 weeks covering for Pokey with the first team. So basically all of the pre-season. And then that led to a job offer to stay and do the under-18s, which I did do. And then for me, in the September, I think it was, an opportunity to go back to Bournemouth and do the 23s came up. And then fortunately, the opportunity to come here and do the first team on a full-time basis came up in the summer. And again, I think the history of Portsmouth speaks for itself. And an opportunity to come and do that was just way too good to turn down. And as soon as I got the first phone call, was just obviously massively excited, hoping it did happen and that, you know, you could come and try and contribute to moving the club in the right direction.
I mean, it's quite the story, isn't it? So, I mean, we have a varied listener base to this podcast. We have some professional goalkeepers. We have some young aspiring goalkeepers. We have non-league goalkeepers. We have professional goalkeeper coaches. But I think crucially, we also have goalkeeper coaches, young lads who would have been like you were, who are working in community schemes who are working for private companies who are desperate to maybe get a chance to be a goalkeeper coach in the Football League. And I guess your testament to the fact that if you really apply yourself, and that's the key thing, right? Because I did a pod with James Belshaw last week, Bristol Rovers number one. Yep. And much of his career was about making the right decision at the right time, but also when you are presented with an opportunity, really making the most of that opportunity and making things happen for yourself, because opportunities are going to be presented to you, but much of life is you then grasping that opportunity and actually making it happen for yourself. And that's exactly what you've done with that experience that you said, Neil Moss, they saw the communication that you had with Mark Travers, and you also went away and did that dossier too. So by applying yourself and going that extra yard, I suppose, you've made it happen for yourself.
Yeah, I think probably the one thing that, you know, basically what you've just said, that if there was any advice that I could kind of give off the back of how my journey's come about, it's just you have to work at the absolute optimum of how you know to in your diligence and like how you treat people, even when you think no one's looking, because the truth is, whether you're player or coach, you never know when someone is looking. And there are so many people that want to get into football, and there are so many good people that have been in football for a long time and find themselves out of it, that it's so competitive. You can't afford to waste any opportunity to show the best version of yourself. And it might never lead to anything, but then at least you've got peace of mind that you've done all you can. So that would probably be my advice. Learn as much as you can about how you think is best to do things, and then commit to it fully. Whether it's the playing side or the coaching side, then I think you'll have nothing left to regret. And I've been really fortunate, and it's easy for me to sit here now and say it, because I like to think some of those efforts and trying to do things the right way have, with a bit of luck, created some opportunities for me, and I'm sat here doing something I love. And for some people, despite doing really good things, that might not come. But like I say, at least there'll be the peace of mind that there's nothing more you can do. So yeah, I would, if there was any advice, it would just be, work as if everyone's looking, even if, you know, no one is, because you never know when they are.
And you've got a great setup here. So let's get into that. And I guess your ultimate goalkeeping department that you would like to have, or how you foresee that, because again, watched you today, and it's very much you at the moment, isn't it? Yeah. You're out there, like we said, in horrendous conditions, you know, barking these instructions to the guys. And for a moment, I did think he's flying solo here, which is the case for many goalkeeper coaches throughout the Football League. But if you could have your ultimate goalkeeping department, or I guess let's look into your philosophy and what it is that you want as a goalkeeper coach.
In terms of what I want, I think we were kind of having the conversation earlier. I think sometimes you have to be realistic. So depending on things like budget and remit, obviously, and standard that you're working at, and whether it's a number one or a fourth choice or whatever, obviously dictate some things. But the key thing for me as raw ingredients is an ability to move and a desire to save it. And I know that sounds really basic, but I think they are the raw ingredients that kind of as coaches we need. And then I think it's my job to help them understand the game and understand their own individual capabilities, because I think if they can understand their capabilities and understand the game, and you're putting them in the right scenarios, you can guide them to be individually effective and consistently effective, because I think that's what you're always striving towards. So you, especially say in first team environment, you have to keep that baseline of their performance has to be at a certain level to keep them in the team, and you're striving to keep creeping that up but never compromising the consistency of the baseline performance. Whereas I think in development football, like we kind of spoke about earlier, I think you can sort of rip their game apart in a harsher way at times, because you're not worried about how they perform over the next 3 weeks. You're trying to build a picture over the next 6 months. So I would say for me, in that sense, first team and development don't change in terms of what I want. Just the raw ingredients, a willingness to learn and a capability to move and a desire to, you know, save it. And then I think it's for you as a coach to work with the goalie to turn that into those consistent performances, which maybe you have to do in a more subtle way in the performance environment, because you need them to feel good and on the Tuesday and you need them to feel good on the Saturday. But certainly for me, whether I'm 50 and working with a 35-year-old or whether I'm 31 and working with a 23-year-old, my aim is always to keep trying to improve them and not just facilitate. So I think that those character traits of a willingness to learn become really key as well.
And in terms of don't know whether it's the right word, but dictating a session or dictating what a goalkeeper does. Yeah. I guess you can guide as much as you like, and this is something we spoke about earlier as well, but by drip feeding that information, you almost want to get to a point where you need a goalkeeper that's going to take it on board as well, don't you?
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And that's where I think honesty and being a good person, I know probably sounds a bit like a cliche that everyone says, but I think it is really important. So, I mean, I go back to Ox when I first went in at Southend. I know one of the things why he probably was willing to give me a chance was it was when COVID was around and he wasn't in on our first day because his little ones were had COVID or were unwell, certainly had symptoms. So the first phone conversation I had with him was about his children rather than anything to do with football or what we were looking to do. And I think that just gave us a buy-in on a human level. And I think in terms of how much you need to dictate or how much they're willing to come to you, I try and create an environment where, and it might sound a bit strange, but we talk a lot here about, especially with the younger goalies, you have to accept that you're going to concede loads of goals in your career. Because I think the sense of saying to a goalkeeper, your job is to keep clean sheets and save everything, creates this pressure around every time a ball goes in or every time they're not able to do that. So I kind of try and work to the philosophy of you have to accept that you're going to concede goals, but we have to work as hard as possible to leave the hardest possible finish for the opposition and to put the pressure onto them to be good in order to beat us. And I think if you can try and create that in an environment where they feel they can have an opinion, there is that willingness to learn and come to you and try stuff. But then I think on the flip side of that trust, you also have to have the strength and confidence in yourself that, coming back to that other phrase of being consistently effective, if something isn't working for them, you have to have the confidence to go, you know, look, we've spoken about this 3 or 4 times. Like, it's now cost 4 goals. We need to adapt this behaviour, or we need to see how we can, you know, make this harder for the opposition in that moment. And I think if you've got good communication and you're honest and you've got evidence to support it, I think it's really hard for someone to not listen. They might not like it. They might sit there and think, you so-and-so, or don't agree. But ultimately, I think as long as it's constructive, as long as it's consistent, and as long as it's honest, anyone with the right mindset will be able to accept it. And so, yeah, that's something we probably try and build in terms of philosophy here, accepting that goals will go in, but not liking it and trying to make it as hard as possible for it, to try and create that kind of freedom and desire for the enjoyment of saving it rather than the fear of conceding it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned communication there. I'll drop in a Richard Lee-ism here. He likes this one, that communication isn't what's said, it's what's received. And that's what's so important in this instance, isn't it? And I guess as well, how often or how much do you not let a goalkeeper dictate a session, but have a goalkeeper influence a session? Because every goalkeeper is different. So today, for example, you're almost tweaking a session to work how that particular goalkeeper wants to work.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think, again, it comes back to relationship and different people, different ways, but probably the ways in which I've done it to this point in my career is that I always think, say, a Monday on a Saturday, Tuesday week and the Friday, you have to concede a little bit to the goalkeeper because you need them in a good place for the game the next day because their performance is obviously the key thing. That's the outcome of everything you're trying to do is the goalkeeper being in a place to perform. But then particularly on a Saturday to Saturday week, as we spoke about earlier, I would kind of consider the Monday and Tuesday more for me. So if I really needed to try and change something with a goalkeeper, go after it more on those days, so then they can go away and clear their mind on the Wednesday. And then on the Thursday, Friday, you're certainly letting them goalkeep in a natural way so that they feel confident and sharp ahead of the game. And again, I think it comes down to the kind of people you recruit. So like for Matt and Josh, who we had earlier in the season as our number ones, great professionals, great characters. So I know, say on a Friday, the conversation might be, right, this is the scenario, this is what we're doing. If you want to do one and swap, that's fine. Reps are on you. And you give them that freedom to manage their body. And I know with both of those two characters, if they felt in a good place and they were able to, say, do 3 rounds, they'll do 3 rounds. So I know on the day where they only do 1, that's genuinely what they feel is best for them ahead of tomorrow. Whereas, say, on a Tuesday, which might be a harder working day, that might be a day where I do dictate, right, we're doing 4 of this. And you might feel tired at the end, but it's 4. So I think picking and choosing, and again, I think it's just that constant theme of same as any good relationship, whether it's football or personal life, like it's a bit of give and take, it's a bit of compromise. And I always think someone's willing to work hard and compromise and buy into stuff if they feel involved in the process. For me, I'm not sure I ever see myself being completely like dictatorial in the way I go, because I just not sure that's how it works to get the best out of someone. But I've probably had to adjust to get that edge where I do go, well, no, look, this has cost us too many times now, or we do need to change this behaviour, or we need to spend a little bit of time on this. So, yeah, I think that's probably something that's I've had to really force myself to grow as a skill set, that confidence to go, actually, no, I disagree, and this is why, when you're kind of working with senior players. So, yeah, I think give and take.
And I think that's where someone like yourself and the other goalkeeper coaches that we've mentioned already who have come from a non-professional background, that's where, similar to a young lad coming into the first team setup, he's got to back himself. Yeah. So you've got to do the same thing, right? You've got to believe that you have a right to be here and you have to back yourself.
Yeah, 100%. And I'll be honest, it's not, and I'd like to think people that know me would kind of back that up. It's probably not something that comes that naturally to me. And probably when I reflect, when I first went into Bournemouth, it probably came out at some moments in the wrong way. So I probably doubted myself so much in some moments that the way it was verbalised was to overfight my own corner, because I kind of had to keep telling myself, no, you're not wrong. So fight your own corner, back yourself. And it probably came out over-opinionated in some moments, because I was just so desperate to not question myself in every moment. And again, I can only repeat that I just pay so much credit to like my brother and Moles initially at Weymouth, and then, you know, Ant, Mossy, Gaz and Matty and some of the other outfield coaches at Bournemouth that, you know, started to give you some nice feedback and go, oh, do you know what, like, that's really good, we like that, and help grow your confidence. There was one moment where I remember a real kind of shift in having to go, no, look, I just need to be calmer in the fact that maybe I should be here. So I can't remember exactly how it came about, but one weekend the under 18s and 23s mixed group were training at the first team training ground at Bournemouth at the back of the stadium. I can't remember why at the time, but Aaron was left behind to train. He wasn't part of the group that had travelled.
Aaron Ramsdale,
yeah. And so straight away Mossy said to me, oh, you're going to have Aaron with you tomorrow. And I remember thinking, oh no, like, this is a really talented young goalie. The club think a lot of. The game of football probably thinks a lot of. And I've got to coach him tomorrow. And I remember spending hours the night before trying to plan this session and getting really uptight about it. Anyway, went out and delivered the session. Aaron gave it a right go, to be fair to him. Seemed to enjoy it. His attitude was top notch. And yeah, I still remember having this nervous feeling afterwards. And then it was on the Saturday night after the game. I don't know whether Mossy even remembers it, to be fair, but he phoned me and was just like, oh, just so you know, like, Aaron loved today, really, really enjoyed it, thought it was a good session. And at the time, and probably to this day, like, I still don't know whether that was true or not. It might have been Mossy playing a bluff game and, you know, Aaron hadn't said anything to him, but it just gave me a little boost. You were like, okay, like, I've got utmost respect for Ant and Mossy and think they're really good Premier League coaches, and someone that they've bought in and is working at the top level with loads of good goalkeepers around them. If he has said that, like, maybe I need to start to not get carried away with it, but just start to remove some of the self-doubt and come back to what Mossy had always said. If you've got a why, go with it and learn from it. So it is something you have to find in yourself, because you can be the nicest person in the world and the most enthusiastic person in the world, and that will get you a certain amount of buy-in from people. But they will also see through you if there's nothing else beyond that. So yeah, it's definitely something you have to learn and grow with, and definitely something I've had to consciously try and train myself to find, really, because it's probably, you know, not, even when I was playing in non-league football, I was way too nervous for something that I supposedly enjoyed doing. But now, like I say, I just feel in a really nice place now, where I'm not ever going to sit here and say I'm a good coach. All I'd sit here and say is I'm able to enjoy coming to work, because I know I can't prepare better than I do. And I'll always learn more day by day. So hopefully you can only improve. And yeah, like I say, I think sometimes you just have to look a bit subjectively. And unless someone said something behind my back. I've, you know, to be trusted at a club like this, hopefully that means some people have seen something good in you. To be trusted when, unfortunately, there's been a change of manager in the season and for the club to still want you around, for someone like Mossy and that to trust you and for Bournemouth to employ me for a second time. You just have to kind of try and feed on things that have actually happened. So instead of maybe taking your self-doubt opinion, you have to go, well, if I trust all of these other people and they seem to keep putting trust in me, maybe I'm going to take what their opinion of me might be in terms of what my perception of me might be in some moments.
It's remembering why you're here, right? And why you're doing what you're doing as well, because you're presented with those moments like working with Aaron Ramsdale. And I guess it's fight or flight, right? It's sink or swim. It's okay, this is what I want to do, so I have to smash this and not be nervous. And I completely understand why you did the training plan and spent hours and hours over it, because you want it to be perfect. But ultimately, if you're good enough to do it as well, then you'll do it.
Yeah, I think so. And I think probably, like I've just said, that's the point where I've got to in my career now. Like, I just feel really at peace in terms of, I like to think I'm humble enough to learn from anyone and everyone, that there's something to learn from. But I've also got enough peace of mind with where I'm at, which hopefully you saw today, where I can go out and be confident and bubbly on the pitch, because I genuinely love what I do. And I do feel in a place where I'm able to add some value to the people that, you know, I'm working with. And that's a really nice place to be in. And, you know, hopefully if I can just keep, you know, having the desire to work hard and the humbleness to learn, then however long my career is in football, hopefully I'm only going to become more and more capable and more and more confident.
There is an argument as well, I suppose, of that overcompensation as well, because you didn't come from the background of, and I'm not saying here that goalkeeper coaches who were previously players are in any way lazy at all, but I guess they feel like they have a bank of information and experience that they can fall back on and bring that into a coaching arena. You haven't had that. So in a way, you are overcompensating from the off, and like you said, constantly learning and continually learning too.
No, 100%. I couldn't agree more. Like, I mean, I've worked with a number of goalie coaches that are all ex-pros, and their work rate and diligence has all been excellent in everyone I've come across. So I completely agree. I don't think that just because I've felt more to prove that I work any harder than they do, I feel like they're probably just got more calmness around it when they step into the coaching. Although the coaching's maybe new to them, they know the environment more. So before I had stepped foot on my first day at Southend, other than being around some first team sessions in a support server capacity at Bournemouth, like, I've never been on a League One or Two training pitch. I've never been shouted at by the senior pro because he doesn't like what I'm telling him. I've not experienced some of those things. So I think that's definitely the head start that the ex-pros have. I think they understand the environment much more from day one. They're just learning it through a coach's lens now and seeing it through a coach's lens, which I think for most of the people I've spoke to that know they want to go into coaching, they start to look at it through that way, maybe to the back end of their careers anyway, especially maybe now in the modern game where maybe the back end of someone's career is as a number three or four that perhaps didn't used to happen. They've got a bit more time to start to look at it through that lens. So whereas for me coming in, it wasn't only the coaching element that was new, the whole environment and the standards and the expectations and the how you conduct yourself, all of it was new to me. But no, I felt really fortunate that I've worked with a lot of ex-pros and they've been nothing but helpful to me. And just really grateful for the experience that they've shared from what they've seen through a different way.
And not always the easiest environment to come into, a football club, is it?
No.
It takes a certain type of person.
It really does. And I think to be honest, obviously, as I've mentioned him a few times, like, my twin brother was a massive influence for me on that, because we had a few senior pros at Southend, and I remember quite early on he had to challenge a couple of them on some of their behaviours on the pitch. I remember being stood there like, oh, I'm not sure I'd have said that, Tom. But actually, I look back at it now and I'm like, no, whether he felt confident in that moment when he was doing it or not, that's the job he was being paid to do, to get the team to perform and to get them to improve. And I think that's probably the bit that has helped me, again, when you come back to the confidence thing. Like, you can detach the two. They're almost two separate things. So my kind of desire to help everyone else will always come above my thoughts for myself. So if if I keep that as the priority in the forefront of my mind, like, it almost gives me confidence in a weird way, because I'm like, well, I know I'm going to leave no stone unturned to help that person. So if I'm going to leave no stone unturned, there's nothing more I can do. And almost shifting your focus from yourself onto what might someone else need from me. And I always feel like, you know, without getting too deep, but if someone you care about or someone you're trying to help needs you, that's probably the easiest time to step up than maybe sometimes when you need yourself, if you're lacking in self-confidence. So I just had to start to look at it through that lens, and it was him that made me see that. He went, forget everything else. Like, in that moment, the player or the group might need something from you, and it's our job to be able to deliver what they need from us in that moment. So I think just trying to remember that, really, as well.
Speaking of what a player needs, stats and analytics are a huge part of the game nowadays, and it's nothing new. Clubs up and down the country adopt this. They have analysts. I've been in to see you, Dan, and the guys. You've quite the setup there. Just run us through exactly what it is that you look at, how you set everything up prior to games.
Yeah, so we're really lucky. Like, Dan Ashby, who's our lead analyst, is excellent and really helpful, and he's got a few interns that help him. So they help me. They'll put together like an organiser of the set pieces of the opposition from, depending how many they've had, but over a 5-6 game period. And then some data to back up some of their trends, where they might deliver to, how many numbers in the box, who's got the first contacts. And then I'll go off and watch all the set plays and whittle it down. You know, any trends I see, anything I think that might particularly be dangerous to the way in which we're set up defensively. And then I'll go and use the data to back up what I think I've seen. I personally try not to look at the data first and only look for what I've then seen. I try and look with it with a fresh pair of eyes, and then use the data to consolidate what I've seen. And Harry's great with it as well. One of the interns, he's put together a package for me, which basically is almost like a pitch map of where certain things happen, with the numbered stats in there, and I can click on it and it goes to a video of all those instances. And we're in the process of trying to work that through for opposition threats and chances against us, just particularly in those Saturday, Tuesday weeks where, like I said to you, you're suddenly shifting from one game, you've reviewed that, and now your hat's on the next game, just very quickly being able to find the important information. So, I don't know, just as a quick example, like, let's say opposition's had 60 chances on goal. The 10 that are just random sequences of play that might happen again can almost be dismissed, because we all know that from a long ball in a game, there might be a shot from the edge of the box, for an example. But is there a trend of them trying to flick that ball on and then cross cutbacks from the left? And they're the moments that you're kind of obviously really trying to be aware of, if there's anything that's more likely to happen than something else. But then that comes back into your prep. You kind of, across your week, across your season, the goalie has to be prepared for anything, because you can't predict blade for grass where something's going to happen, or when he cuts it back, he's definitely going to finish with his right foot, because that depends on where the pressure's coming from. So it's just trying to see those general trends and areas they might get into, areas the chances might come from, the type of finishes they might be. So just trying to use the data to really quickly focus on some of those key areas, as opposed to having to watch through everything myself, which, you know, in a Saturday, Tuesday week, and when you're trying to do the set pieces, and as I showed you earlier, through my processes, I'm quite detailed in the way in which I clip things, and probably a bit OCD with it, but that takes an amount of time too. So just trying to find the way for all of us that we can find the important information as quickly and concisely as possible, really.
And how you apply that as well on the training ground. And I saw this earlier. This was something that you mentioned that I thought was quite interesting and worth us bringing up now, is that when you watch the opposition and identify how they play, you will then implement that in your session without notifying the goalkeepers that that's what you're doing.
Yeah, so on a Saturday to Saturday week, for example, obviously a Monday is, although obviously goalkeepers don't need as much of a recovery day as, say, an outfield player who's covered big distances, is particularly for the one that played, getting them going again, getting their sharpness going. And then on a Tuesday would obviously be like a work day, so a higher volume, but as well as the work around the goalie's individual needs, whether it's their areas of strength or their areas of focus, I would just put in their scenarios that I think we're going to face from the opposition. But like you say, not tell them about it, just let them live it. And then on the Thursday, which the goalie's cotton on to soon enough, that, you know, they're not stupid, it's not a, you know, no great trick. Then on the Thursday, when you're going, right, here's two or three of the opposition's key threats, and we're trying to create it in as real a way as we can. They're going, okay, yeah, we've done at least a couple of these on the Tuesday. And then the Friday session, which you saw today, is what I call like an end action session. So particularly with, say, Matt at the moment, he'll like to start on a Friday with, you know, an opening period where he catches an amount of balls, and there's an amount of balls just in and around him where he can get his feet and hands going. And then we just literally pick a couple of the key scenarios we've worked on or looked at and do it as, like I say, end action. So as opposed to the slip pass coming down the side and a cutback, for example, we might just turn into a static ball and replicate the finish scenario from the cutback. We might just put the ball wide already in the cutback area. So basically, he's seen the scenario and processed it maybe tactically through the week. And now we're just sharpening those skills of, right, okay, so you're in that situation now, the type of save you might have to make. So that hopefully come tomorrow, he feels ready for anything that can come. But also you've been specific enough that you want the goalkeeper to go into the game. For example, let's say you've got a team that's really strong with crosses from the box, and linking back to the data, you might have a stat that shows that your goalkeeper is A, really positive at dealing with crosses, or B, really effective at shot stopping from crossing scenarios. So I'm definitely feeding that into him. Like, if the opposition score a lot of their goals from crosses, I'm going, by the way, their biggest threat is from crosses, which is great for us because you're really strong on crosses. And even if it's one you can't come for, your shot stopping is one of the highest in the league from crosses. So they're the time where I wouldn't ever really overfill the goalkeepers with stats, probably, in the way I've worked and the people I've worked with. If they wanted different, obviously you can adapt that. But there's an opportunity where the data becomes really important. Their strength is going to be nullified because you're really good in that moment. And they go into tomorrow confident, like, come on then, what? Come and beat me.
So ultimately the game's about scoring goals and trying not to concede goals. But when you're in that dugout and you're watching a game of football, there must be moments. And I mean, I guess, do you remember the first time this happened where all the work you've done on the training ground, and it could be those instances that you said there, it could be just collecting a cross, it could be cutting out a passage of play, it could be a lovely bit of sweeper keeping, where you've been in the dugout and thought, yes, that's what we've worked on and it's paid off?
I think probably, like, I don't know how anyone else feels, it's probably more relief for the player. Like, I've been fortunate, like I say, I've worked with some really good people. So you just genuinely really want it to go well for them and the team and the club. So if they perform and contribute to a result, like, it's happiness for them and relief that it's gone well for them, I think, initially, is my first feeling. And then it is nice sometimes you go away and review your process and you go, okay. I mean, I joked earlier, didn't I, with you that, like, it's, I feel your job is to not mess them up. Like, yeah. They're all at a certain level. Like, we're really lucky. So Matt, for example, is a good goalkeeper, more than able to play in League One. And I'm trying to find those extra little percentages that can help, hopefully, take him to an even better level. But yeah, it is a nice feeling, but more for them, like I say, tend to focus on the other person. I think, when I first come into it, though, you did feel that, I felt that real personal pressure. Like, oh, if he makes a mistake, it's my fault. If he does really well, it's because of him. If he makes a mistake, it's because of me. And I've probably lost that a bit now. I like to think I stay quite level. If you've prepared the best way you can, again, like, we have to accept goals. I'm not saying we want mistakes to happen. I'm not saying they can happen regularly in a performance environment, but they will happen. And, you know, there was a couple of bits in Matt's performance from the other week where he wasn't quite happy with them. And his word for me was, but I'm going to find it easy to move on from because I was really happy with our prep. I know I couldn't have done more. And I felt like we'd seen everything that they did throw at us. So we move on to next one. And I think that's the mindset you have to have to be in the performance environment. I think you can't get too high and you can't get too low. And probably boring me keep saying it, but I think it just comes back to the process. Just finding peace of mind that you can't have done more with the knowledge you have at this precise moment. Because, yeah, hopefully in 2 years' time I'll have more knowledge than I do now, but I don't have it now. I've only got the knowledge that I have today. And, like, I feel like today I've done the best I can to round off the week, to leave the goalies in the best place possible. And hopefully they feel the same way. And then it comes back to the environment. Hopefully if they don't feel the same way, they feel powered enough that they can just come and go, oh, by the way, Joe, last week I was flagging by Friday. Or Friday, I don't think you quite recap the detail well enough for us. And I think if you've got a combination of that, then you're probably in the best place you can be to hopefully get consistent performances.
Okay, well, just a couple more questions, but just to go back on what you said there about it coming back on you or coming back on the goalkeeper coach, or on the goalkeeper, sorry. I think that's an ongoing battle that's probably never going to ever end for a goalkeeper coach, right? Whether a goalkeeper concedes a goal, the manager, depending on the relationship that you have with the manager, may turn to you and be like, what's he doing? What's he done? And in terms of recruitment as well, you suggest or advise that a goalkeeper should come in, that goalkeeper comes in. If it does not maybe work out, again, it falls back on you.
Yeah. And I think, again, I'll kind of repeat for probably about the 100th time. Like I say, I always personally come back to the environment that Mossy created and have the why. And then I'm really fortunate that with John, the head coach, and Rich, the sporting director here, they're great. In terms of that, what I just kind of alluded to about never getting too high and never getting too low, John is very much someone that will come and pose questions about the goalkeepers in a moment. So like, oh, what do you think here? Because I'd really like in this moment if he could do X or Y, but he'll want to understand whether what his expectation and desire from them is possible and the mitigations as to why it might not quite happen in that way. So on the day-to-day training ground, brilliant. And then he adapts training to, you know, with small things, which I won't give away, but that he does very cleverly to A, show the goalies that he cares and that he's trying to improve them as well. And B, gives him an opportunity to learn about them in a more rounded way. And then with the recruitment side of things as well, both him and Rich are, again, I think it's just the trust they give in you. So you feel able to give an opinion, but Rich is also very realistic when you speak to him. A bit like we said, you can only have the knowledge you have now. You can do all your homework on someone as a character. Their current form can be really, really good. Everything can tick a box. You speak to people they trust. The player wants to come. He comes, you sign him, and it just doesn't work out. And again, it comes back to the process that as long as we were happy at every stage of our essential criteria, then whether you put the end responsibility on me as the goalkeeping coach or the player to go out and then perform over a sustained period of time, it doesn't necessarily mean whether it goes well or badly that the decision to sign them was right or wrong. It might mean that it just didn't work. It might mean that actually how you worked together on the training pitch didn't quite bind together, but the initial decision and process of signing them could have been a really sound one. So I think it's just trying to make sure you're lined up there. And that's where, like I say, I got to give them both a lot of credit because I think if you spoke to any of the staff here, we all feel empowered and trusted to do our job. And I think that's really helpful in any industry to feel like you're here for a purpose and like you're playing a part.
And you are where you are now. You'd like to think the only way is up, especially the way that your trajectory has gone so far. But have there been any moments in particular since you've been a professional goalkeeper coach, since you've been at Portsmouth, where you have stepped back and thought, wow, this is pretty awesome?
For every day is the honest truth. But no, I mean, as far back as Bournemouth, like I say, to see, you know, coaches like Eddie Howe work and top level goalkeepers, Asmir, Arta, Aaron and Travs coming through, Mossy, Ant, Gaz, all the coaches, really lucky in that sense. And then, yeah, probably this season, I think opening day of the season, I think there was about 35,000 at Hillsborough, Portsmouth, Sheffield Wednesday. And I'm just like, wow, how did this happen? And then I think there was one point in the FA Cup game, obviously we had Spurs away in the FA Cup, where I've got responsibility with set pieces. I was up at the edge of the technical area trying to get an instruction on for a set piece. And as I turned to sit down, the only person stood up in their technical area was Conte. And I just remember thinking in my head, how the hell did this happen? Like, how am I in this stadium having not paid to be here? And how have I got an actual responsibility to try and affect what's happening on the pitch? And I think we kind of spoke about it earlier. I think it's moments like that where you do have to consider yourself really lucky and let that kind of fuel one of two things. So, like I said, whether it's the experience of getting to live the Football League with my brother and a good friend in Mark, or work with people that I grew up playing, or some of those experiences here that we just spoke about, it fuels that you have to enjoy every day, because you don't know how many days you're going to get in football. Like I alluded to earlier, I consider myself really lucky at the moment to be one of the goalkeeping coaches that is in work, because there's loads of really good, experienced people that aren't at the moment. And my time will come again, I have no doubt, where I'm out of work. So I kind of have to really, really enjoy every every day. But then also because of that enjoyment and desire to be in it, that has to fuel how hard you work and how diligently you work to make sure you've controlled the controllables to hopefully A, stay in work and contribute meaningfully for as long as possible. And then obviously we all want our trajectory to be upwards. No one's going to sit here and go, I want to go backwards. Everyone wants to move forwards. And if I can help contribute and play my part in moving this club forward, that would be something I'll be really proud of and feel genuinely really privileged to have had an opportunity to play a part in.
Excellent. Okay, Joe, I've thoroughly enjoyed this. Hopefully many of our listeners will take plenty from this. But we have one final question that is always asked at the end of the podcast, and it's asked by Mr. Richard Lee himself. So over to Richard.
Indeed, the part of the show when I step in with a very lazy voice note just to ask the most important question of the show, which is, Joe, what has goalkeeping given you?
It's a good question. It's given me loads. It's definitely given me an opportunity to live my dreams and to experience things I never thought I would. It's given me an opportunity to learn about myself and grow as a person, like we alluded to. Like you've had your self-confidence and your knowledge challenged, and you've had to find the answers to that. And for me as well, it has just given me a real purpose. Like it's what I love doing. It's an absolute passion. And like I say, I just feel really, really lucky. So it's given me an awful lot. And I'm lucky that I've got a family that fully support that. So yeah, it's given me everything really.
Joe Prudhomme, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.